Welcome back here on Hampshire Now, 1-9, 1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Reinepish. Joining us for the program this hour of the show is brought to you by Reuben Community Mental Health. In this segment of the program, presented by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for individuals with dementia, Alzheimer's, and other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour and celebrate life at the Birches. Phone number 224-9111. Yesterday at a cafe in Manchester, Paul Steinhauser and I sat down with billionaire philanthropist and Democratic activist Tom Steyer. So we're joined by Tom Steyer, who has made the decision not to run for president of the United States, but still here in New Hampshire. And Tom, I was a guy who thought that you had, you know, what it took to at least run for president. You had a good, compelling narrative, a story, and that you were, in fact, going to get into the race. What has precluded you from doing that, in your view?
Well, it wasn't that I made the decision not to run. It's I made the decision to finish the job and push as hard as I could to make sure that our president was impeached and removed from office as soon as possible. Because I feel as if the biggest threat to the United States for a generation is this disaster of a president, the most corrupt president in American history. And I felt organizing and empowering the American people to call for his immediate removal is the most important thing that I could do at this time, and that's why I decided to do it. It felt like the right thing.
But couldn't you have done it simultaneously in running for president, gaining that platform, that opportunity, and pushing for his removal, and have it as twofold? You're pushing for his removal as via impeachment, but also, if that doesn't happen, you have the ability to put your name on the ballot and to, if it needs to take place, to finish the job and put the impetus behind doing things in both realms.
Well, it's a long life, honestly. And I just felt like I wanted to be completely committed to this. We have so much. I really felt like we'd started this job by getting this movement going. We have 7 million petition signers. We now need to broaden this out to more people and to make sure that the people who are signing up are more involved and we turn it into an actual grassroots movement to hold accountable elected officials and hold accountable people running for president. We have an immediate crisis in our country, constitutional, but also this government shutdown illustrates how much damage he's doing on a daily basis to the people of America, and we need to focus on it and get him out as soon as possible. And it really has to become a broad grassroots movement across parties, across geographies, and I didn't want to compromise that effort because I feel as if it is the most important thing confronting the country.
But in doing that, you are, you know, placing the onus on others, and you're doing something that is outside of your control and saying to them, this is what we want you to do. We want you to impeach the president. Was that difficult to do as opposed to saying, I'm going to take this on myself and control my own destiny as a candidate and push forth a message and, you know, make sure that I'm an individual who can remove the president via the ballot box?
Well, I think everything that I've done in politics and everything our organization has done, whether it's the Need to Impeach campaign itself or our youth voter mobilization effort, which in 2018 was the largest in American history, has been about grassroots. I mean, what I've always believed is we've gotten way too far from government of, by, and for the people. Mm-hmm. And all of our efforts have been an attempt to push power to the people, to the grassroots, to American citizens, and try to organize their voice so that what they think and what they care about happens. And really, when I think about impeachment, I think about it in two steps. One is for us to get back on a positive path, we need to get rid of this corrupt, destructive president. But the second step that has to be part of this is an awareness of that as a country, we can get back to a positive vision of the future together. And that is until we get rid of him, that isn't possible. But once we do get rid of him, it's absolutely essential that we have a shared vision of how we can be just and prosperous and have a commitment to each other and what it means to be an American. So I view this as honestly, I'm committed to that two-step movement, but you can't get away from the fact that none of the positive is going to happen. The crisis is the president. We need to confront that and use the tools that the Constitution gives us, which is impeachment and removal. And it's got to happen as soon as possible, because we can see with our own eyes, not just that he's so corrupt and criminal, there's going to be cascading evidence on that, but also he's so destructive. What he's doing to this country and the people of this country on a daily basis is, you know, it's dramatic and it's terrible and it's got to end.
As we're sitting here in Manchester on a Wednesday conducting, or on a Thursday conducting this interview, there's a big article in The Atlantic now making the same case for impeachment. And I'm wondering, do you feel there's been resistance to this movement of yours in the past? Do you feel more, it's becoming more, there's more of an acceptance of the need to impeach now by mainstream Democrats?
Well, mainstream Democrats have been behind this for forever. Who hasn't been behind it is the people inside the Beltway, which is where that writer for The Atlantic actually is. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Dave Leonhardt for the New York Times came out similarly about 2 weeks ago, and he lives in Washington also. So the number of Democrats, when you say mainstream Democrats, we probably have 80% of Democrats who agree with us. The mainstream of Democratic Party believes this president should be impeached and removed yesterday. What hasn't happened, and what you're referring to, is the mainstream inside the Beltway elite Democrats have not thought it was in their interest, and they've been really slow. So are we happy? Am I personally happy that The Atlantic magazine wrote a very cogent, very smart article supporting the case we've been making for the last 15 months? Ecstatic. Am I happy that the New York Times did it 10 days ago? Ecstatic. Am I happy that people are coming around and realizing that events have proved that what we were saying is true? I'm not happy the events happened, even though I knew we felt really strongly they were going to happen. But do I think it's important that people like that, who are opinion leaders and, you know, kind of political intellectuals, are coming to the suggestion that we can't just sit by and let evil flourish? Yes, I'm very, very happy they're doing it. And I think that's the broadening we need. I knew it would take a long time for people to come around. I'm not sure why, but we're seeing that this is an inflection point. But the bulk of the Democratic Party, in terms of citizens, have been here for months, honestly. What we're seeing is the elites following normal, everyday citizens.
You're not running for president, but there are a number of others who are. And we're seeing their campaigns starting to sprout up, and they're all coming here. What is the relationship with you and your organization, specifically NextGen, which has been great with grassroots? I'm assuming you stay neutral in the primaries, and do you help rally around the nominee eventually? What is your path going forward?
Honestly, that's a great question. I'm not sure. I can say in 2016, that's what we did. We tried to get as much information to the grassroots as possible on every single candidate. Our website tracked them. We tried to push them to be as progressive as possible, specifically on climate. And we waited until after the last Democratic primary, when it was clear that Mrs. Clinton was going to be the nominee, just the numbers were there, to make any kind of endorsement. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure we'll do the same thing this time. There's so many people involved. We certainly will want to push people specifically on impeachment. My feeling is, if you have a fire in your living room and somebody wants to run the house and they don't want to deal with the fire in the living room, they shouldn't run the house. It's improper. If you're not willing to deal with the biggest crisis in America, the biggest threat to our country for a generation, and you don't want to talk about it, and you're not willing to deal with it, you shouldn't be president, period. But exactly how we go forward, we don't even know yet who's running or how many people are running or what their stances are politically. So I think it's really premature to judge. But I think that what we're going to see is some form of reorder. I think we're seeing the front end of a reordering of our democracy. And how that's going to play out, I'm not sure. But I do know that from our standpoint, we're a grassroots organization. We're going to be organizing young people the way we did in 2018, in 2016, in 2014. We'll be on the campuses. We'll be on social media. Definitely. We've been here for 5 years. Mm-hmm. We will be using our 7 million person need to impeach list to make sure that they're involved and try to make them a grassroots movement specifically holding people accountable. And we'll be trying to make sure that as this goes along, we're pushing for impeachment for sure and a progressive view of what that positive view of America can be. Look, we are still working off the intellectual framework of the Reagan Revolution. And it is intellectually and morally bankrupt. And we need to replace it with a different way of thinking about this country that's much more optimistic, that's much more forward-thinking, and much more just.
That's billionaire philanthropist Tom Steyer joining us. God, I love New Hampshire. Love New Hampshire, the politics, the campaigning, being on the campaign trail at a coffee shop in Manchester and talking about these issues. And, getting back to the original question about regards running for president, for me, it's a fascinating process, the decision-making that takes place amongst individuals about whether or not they're going to pursue the highest office in the nation. You gave your biggest rationale was that you wanted to focus on impeachment. I'm wondering how close you got to doing this. And B, were there other factors outside of the impeachment cause that led you to say, you know what, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to pursue this from a different avenue as opposed to putting my name on the ballot, continue with my progressive causes and the impeachment issue outside of that.
Look, I said throughout 2018 when people asked me whether I was going to run for president, and people must have asked me 1,000 times.
Paul and I, 500 just amongst us.
And I said to you what I said to every person, and I'm not sure anyone believed me. I said, I'm going to try to figure out what I can do that has the most positive differential impact for the country. That's what I want to do. And I may come up with an answer that surprises me. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be my only criterion for making the decision. And I felt like when I thought about this, this is the right thing for me to do right now. And it's not close. There's no one else who's going to do this organizing work if we don't do it. There's nobody else who started 15 months ago to push for this and has 7 million people who've signed up. There's no one else in a position to get the kind of movement organized and reach out to people that we're in a position to do. So I felt like this is the challenge for the country right now, and I'm in a unique position to be able to push on what I think is fighting, what I think of as just something desperately wrong that is attacking American society, and it's not, no one else is in a position to do it, and no one else is wanting to do it. So our differential positive impact, this is the thing I can do where I can do what I think is the right thing and finish the, you know, I have a huge deal with people doing their jobs. I really do. And I felt like I started this, I'm going to finish the job. And I want people to see that that happens in America, that we're not just talking, that we're going to finish the job.
Paul noted earlier on the show, and it's, again, it's very early during the course of this campaign, but the candidates, as they've come here and declared for they're having an exploratory committee or declared as president, have been reticent to talk about Donald Trump, and they have focused mostly entirely on themselves. And when you look at the,
please, that is a laugh line. I'm sorry.
And when you look at your mission in regards to impeaching the president, having a focus on the president again, that's an absence perhaps in this campaign is not having you pushing forth this messaging in regards to impeachment and removal and so forth. Do you think that this campaign these candidates will continue to try to move away from Donald Trump and focus on specific progressive issues, their own bios? Or do you think that as the campaign moves along, it is going to be focused on Donald Trump? Because they don't want to talk about it, but as Paul noted, the activists, the folks who are asking questions at events, they do want to talk about Donald Trump.
Look, you're asking me, I've said explicitly that I think that Trump is the crisis. Trump is a daily crisis for America. He is the biggest threat to our country for a generation. If you tell me that people are running for president and trying to duck that, I'm not interested in them. We should be challenging them and holding them accountable. How can you possibly want to be president and not confront the biggest issue? It's bad for you politically? That's not the answer we want to hear. What we want to hear is what's right for the American people. Look, I've traveled around this country for 6 years talking to people at a grassroots level. I mean, I was at the Manchester Community Health Clinic this morning. This is a great country, and it is a country where people are really searching for a positive way to think about the future. That is all over this country, both sides of that. This is a great country full of brave, compassionate people searching for the meaning of being American again. And as far as I'm concerned, the biggest thing we can do about that is understand that we have got to pull together in a positive way with responsibility for each other and a civil society that protects us. That's why I've been talking about the five rights that people have that they don't have to earn, they have as Americans. Because we have got to get rid of the cancer that is this presidency, and we have got to get back to a place where we understand what America stands for and what we're trying to achieve together so we can be positive. If you ask yourself how people in New Hampshire feel about the future, it is not the way Americans should feel about the future. We are not nearly as optimistic as we should be. We do not see this in the way that America traditionally has, as we're the world leaders, understanding the future and making it happen in a way that no one else can and everybody else follows. And we have to get back to that spirit.
In conclusion, what is the danger for, you know, progressives in acting in a similar fashion that the president has in terms of including only progressive ideas and feeding that particular base, where the president has focused specifically on his base and has excluded others? If progressives push forth ideas that are, you know, not beneficial or popular amongst the majority of Americans, you know, is there a concern of the rights that you're talking about, you know, shrinking, and they're just seeing a pendulum swing from one side to the other? And how do you see that?
Well, let me reframe your question a little bit. We have the most divided America that we've had since the Civil War. People are really living in different realities. Mm-hmm. And I think it is for us to pull together as a country, we're going to have to get back to a shared way of thinking about the future. And so I think anything that people do that isn't addressing common needs across geographies, across race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation is a mistake. And so I think we really have got to back to a, we have got to get back to a place where we have a shared understanding. And I think it's been missing a positive explanation for what America stands for and who Americans are. And that is specifically not a partisan message. It's not a geographic message. That is something that has got to be understood across every dividing line. And this president has made division his hallmark. Mm-hmm. He literally said he didn't care about the government shutdown because most of the workers who are going to be furloughed or not paid were Democrats. Honestly, if you think about his oath of office, which was to be the president of every American, that was an absolute dereliction of duty. People say, you know, we don't have enough evidence. It's like, that isn't. The real reason to impeach somebody is you didn't live up to your oath to the Constitution and the American people, and he did it right there. As clear as a bell, he said, I don't care. That is so wrong, and we have to get to a different place where everybody understands that we're in it together. And that is the exact opposite of what Mr. Trump stands for.
Is that aspirational type figure that you're describing, is that as important as the other issues that you care about, you know, in regards to the climate, in regards to impeachment, having that figure that's going to unite?
Yeah. I think it's the same thing.
Okay.
Like, what I think is you've got to separate policy from framework. Mm. Policies come out of framework. Mm-hmm. Framework is an understanding on values of what we stand for. That actually, what Reagan said was that government is bad, corporations are good, corporations are just, it's a jungle out there, every man and woman for him or herself, and we shouldn't support people who are struggling, we should celebrate and encourage people who are winning. That has led us to the abyss that we're in politically. That's led to the inequality in our society. It's led to what I think of as the intellectual and moral bankruptcy of the Trump administration. And so the question is, that framework leads to all kinds of policies that you can point to. It specifically leads to that abysmal, destructive tax change that the Republicans forced through in 2018. So from my standpoint, the most important thing is to get up to talk to Americans about a new positive framework that includes everybody. There's almost the exact opposite of that. And that's why I put forward this idea of five rights, that Americans have a right to health and a right to an equal vote and a right to clean air and clean water. All the policies fall out. You know, that is stuff that we've heard from traveling around the country for 6 years. If you have those rights, that answers the EPA question. That answers so many different questions, but it's the framework that you have the no one has a right to poison me to make more money. That's just off the table. So then you get a completely different situation, and you get policies that fall out of that understanding for a long time. Americans aren't going to figure out the nuance, and they shouldn't have to, the nuances of federal health care policy. That is like 12 wonks understand that. You can't ask 320 million people to understand that. That's not their day job. You can't ask them to figure out how the EPA should be responding or exactly, you know, any one of those incredibly complicated things. What you can ask them to understand is what are the values behind being an American? What does it mean? What are the Bill of Rights that you have for being an American that this society will provide, and you then are free to go about your life in the way that Americans been about freedom since we were started. Free, if you're working three jobs, you're not free. If your kid has a pre-existing condition and can't be treated, you're not free. How do we get back to people feeling like this society protects them so they can be free to live their life?
Tom, great to see you, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you guys very much for having me.
That is Tom Steyer. This is New Hampshire Now on KXL. This hour of the program presented by Reuben Community Mental Health, and this segment of the program brought to you by the Birches at Concord.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.